Hello, everybody. Today is September 7th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues in Houston, Texas, for our Lunch and Learn, Parshat Shoftim. And today, we have some very interesting material to study, courtesy of Micha Goodman and his book, Hane'um Ha'acharon Shel Moshe. For those of you listening at home, I'm now showing the book to the audience. Moshe's last speech, based on the idea that the Book of Devarim is essentially a record of the last speeches that Moshe gave to the Jewish people. I always like to remind people that when they complain that my speech is too long on Shabbos, just read the Book of Devarim. And then if you compare how long my speech is to how long Moshe's speech is, I'm in very good shape. So thank you, Moshe, for helping all of us rabbis defend long speeches. Okay, so if you turn to chapter 17, Yud Zion, in the Book of Devarim, verse 413, we come to the point where Moshe talks to B'nai Yisrael and says as follows, Ki tavo el haaretz asher Adonai Elohecha noten lach virishta v'yashavta ba v'yamarta Asima alai melech kechol hagoyim asher sevivotai. If, after you have entered the land that the Lord your God has assigned you, to you, and taken possession of it, and settled in it, you decide, I will set a king over me, as do all the nations about me. Continues, Som tasim alecha melech, asher yivchar Adonai Elohecha bo, mikerev achecha tasim alecha melech, Lo tuchal atet alecha ish nachri asher lo achichahu. Then you shall be free to set a king over yourself, one chosen by the Lord your God. Be sure to set as king over yourself one of your own people. You must not set a foreigner over you, one who is not your kinsman. This is the mitzvah in the Torah of minoy melech, of establishing a king, a monarchy for Bnei Israel. What I do not want to discuss today is whether or not this is an obligation. There's a big debate amongst the Torah commentaries as to whether the establishment of a monarchy is good or bad. On the one hand, it could be bad because who needs a king if we have God? On the other hand, it could be good because a king could help us with international relations and with governance and with all the practical matters of running a nation. And there's a big debate amongst the commentaries as to how to understand this pasuk, these psukim. Is God sort of giving in? Is Moshe via God, or God via Moshe, giving in to what may be the desire of Bnei Yisrael to have a king like every other nation? Because that's what it says, right? Kichol hagoyim. And the only reason they're doing it is because they want to be like every other nation, but really they shouldn't do it. Or, like I said before, maybe it's a good thing. I don't want to talk about that today. What I do want to talk about is the nature of a king in general, how the Book of Devarim views the power and the purpose of a king. And I think we're going to find some really interesting things. And all we're going to do is read snippets of a chapter in Micha Goodman's book. It's only available in Hebrew at this point. His first book, which was a big hit on the Rambam, also came out originally only in Hebrew and then was translated into English. So maybe this will also eventually be translated into English. And I recommend reading it. He does speak English. You could probably find a lot of what he has to say in this book and on various videos available on YouTube. So if you want to Google him later or YouTube search him later, he's really worth your time. But let's see what he has to say about a king in general. Let's start on page 63 on the left, where the first check is, Eifo HaMelech, where is the Melech, where is the king? Okay, any more sheets floating around?
You need one.
Okay, Eifo HaMelech, page 63, left side. B'Historia HaMikra'it, B'Sifrei Shmuel U'Melachim, HaMelech Hu Demut Dominantit. Right, says Micha Goodman, that in the Nevi'im, the prophets, like in the book of Samuel and kings are dominant figures. They're all over the place. That's what the books are about. Melachim Tovim, Kimo David, Romimo Atauma. Good kings like David lifted up the nation. Melachim Raim, Kimo Menashe, Risku Ota. Bad kings like Menashe destroyed or undermined the nation. Matzav Hu Maki Matzav Shiliteha. The condition of the nation was based on the condition of the ruler. Ela Shebetorah. However, contrast that to the Bible. If the books of the prophets are full of stories of kings, the book of the Bible are very different. It's very hard to find anything about a king in the Bible. Lumata tafkid hamerkazi shemimalim hamilachim bihistoria hamikreit. Despite the central place that kings play in the history of the biblical period, Haim kimat ne'edarim mitorat Moshe. They are basically no mention, they're absent from the Bible. B'chol arbat ha'chumashim shekadmu l'sefer Devarim ein kol hityachasut l'tafkido shel ha'melech b'am Yisrael. In Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, Bereishit Shemot Vayikra v'Bamidbar, there is no discussion at all about the purpose of a king in the Jewish, for the Jewish people. Even in those places where we would have expected there to be a mention of a king. For example, at the beginning of Vayikra, he says, Leviticus, in the chapters that are dealing with various karbanot, sacrifices, that are brought when people in various positions make mistakes. So there's a karban to be brought when the Kohen sins, and there's a karban to be brought when the Nasi, the president of the community, sins. There is no discussion at all about the karban to be brought when a king sins. It's totally absent, right? That's what we would expect, a mention of the king. The following are the leaders of the Jewish people: Nasi, Kohen, Melech, and this is what they're supposed to do if they sin. No mention of the king. Turn to page 64. When the Torah talks about the prohibition of cursing certain community leaders, it says, Elokim lo tikalel, v'nasi ba'amcha lo ta'or. You shall not curse the nasi. Again, no mention of the king. Second paragraph, Halamat ha'melech mikotze ha'chukim shel ha'Torah, hi chidush gadol shel ha'Torah. The absence of the king is one of the novel ideas of the Bible. The Mizrach HaKadum, HaMelech Lo Nanameachok, Hu HaMichokek. Right? In the ancient Near East, the king was the rule maker. Not only was the king not absent from the king was the law. Kovtzei Chukim B'Mizrach HaKadum Notim Liftoach Ba'adarat HaMelech Shekavat HaChok. Like Hammurabi. Right? He was the king and he made the rules. Second to bottom paragraph. B'mizrach ha-kadum ha-melech u-merkaz ha-olam. In the ancient Near East, the king is the center of the world. B'torat Moshe lumat zot ha-melech u-demut shulit. In the Torah, the king is a marginal character. Ha-makom ha-yachid shebo hu muzkar hu sefer Devarim. The only place, the only book that has any mention of the king is in the five books, is in the fifth of the five books of Moses, our book, Devarim. And even when the king is mentioned, he is not mentioned where we think he should be mentioned. And we're going to see that his powers are exceedingly, exceedingly limited. Okay. So for example, Let's look in our text. Flip back to chapter 13 in the book of Deuteronomy for a few minutes, which you could find 13 verses 7, 8, 9, and 10, which you could find on page 405. Look at verse number 2. 404. Right? If there appears among you a prophet or a dream diviner, and he gives you a sign or a portent, saying, let us follow and worship another god, etc., etc., what are you supposed to do in that case? You're not supposed to listen to them. This person gets killed. And at the top of page 65 in the packet, Micha Goodman asks, Mihu aguf hamamita tamatif la'avodat elim? Who kills? Who's responsible to carry out the death penalty for this false prophet? Hatara lo migale, hamalchut eina muskeret ki minignon ma'anish. This is a good place to mention the king. The king would carry out this death penalty, but he is not mentioned here at all. And then he goes on to list other places where certain people are punished, and we would think that the king would be the one to carry out the punishment, but the king is not mentioned at all. The king does not punish sinners. The king does not punish the anyone who does anything wrong. What is the king supposed to do? Okay, now let's see. Oh, here's something else we would think the king would do before we move on. Let's look in the 20th chapter of Devarim. Verse 1, starting with verse 1. Etc. If you're going to war and you see horses and chariots, forces larger than yours, don't worry. Everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. And who gives the pep talk? Look at verse 5. V'dibru ha-shotrim el ha'am limor, mi ha'ish asher bana beit chadash. First the Kohen comes and speaks to them in verse 2, and in verse 5, the officials, wouldn't you want the king, right, to come and speak to the troops and say, good luck, be strong, have courage, right? You would expect the king to do it, but the king is not here at all either. So these are just more examples of places in the Torah where we would expect the king to appear, and total punishment and mistakes of the government, punishments of those who do wrong, and rallying the troops. All things which logically the king would do in the Torah, absent. Okay, what is the role of the king? Let's look at chapter 17, verses 18 and 19, which is on page 413. V'haya kishivto al kisei mamlachto. Right, this is our parsha. Right after we said the king gets chosen by the people. So now he's sitting on his throne. V'katavlo et mishnei Torah hazot al sefer melefnei hakohenim halevim. Page 413. When he is seated on his royal throne, he shall have a copy of this teaching written for him on a scroll by the Levitical priests. He should remain with him and let him read it all the days of his life, so that he may learn to revere the Lord as God, to observe faithfully every word of this teaching, as well as these laws.
How could they say that there was no king yet?
No, we're talking about, in the beginning, we said, when you come to the land and you want to establish a king, when you do, this is what he should do. Right? Right. It sounds like, right, the king's role is to become a Talmud Chacham, is to sit and study. Right? Again, all the things we would expect the king to do, he doesn't do. Look on the bottom of page 66 of the packet. Hamelech lo nochach bisrim shemot v'yikra b'midbar. The king does not appear in Shemot Vikram Vidvar. He just appears, he sprouts in the book of Devarim. His job is limited. His job description is one pasuk. One verse. Pasuk shemeteer melech asuk bilimud. A verse which describes the king as engrossed in Torah study. Hamelech shel haTorah hu sug shel tamid chacham. The Torah version, the Devarim version of a king, is a type of scholar. Lo mi sheyotzei b'rosh ha'am lemilchamot, not the one who goes out to lead the troops to war. Lo mi sheboneh mivnei tzibor, not one who builds public works. Lo mi shemotzi lehoreg, and not someone who punishes the guilty. Hamelech korei, the melech reads, the king reads. That is the description so far of the king in the book of Devarim. Something very different than we would think in when we think of ancient Near East. Let's look back to see even how more radical this is. Back on page 413. Read for yourself for a moment, verse 18 and 19 and 20. Who is supposed to obey the king based on these psukim?
No one.
Ah, but who is he supposed to obey? He's supposed to obey God. Right? There's no declaration that anyone has to obey the king, but there is a clear declaration that the king has to obey God. Now, this really flies in the face of something we know that existed as the principle that legitimized kings back in the ancient Near East and even the Middle Ages, which is the divine right of kings. Right? How did a king claim the right to rule? God chose me. We have it now, right? We have the guy in North Korea. Doesn't he say that he is God? Didn't he just kill someone for falling? By the way, speaking of speech, he just killed a guy for falling asleep during one of his speeches. So watch out, Ron. Watch out, Ron. I'm coming for you this Shabbos. It was his uncle?
I didn't know you.
His uncle.
Save me.
Wow. I didn't, but now I got you.
You got me now.
Okay. So there's the divine right of kings, which is not only absent here, it's the opposite. Right? First of all, the people appoint the king, as you see in verse 14 and 15. And it's not God the king has to obey God. The divine right of kings also is something absent here, which may represent the biggest revolution of how Moshe understands the melech, because at that period of time, that is how kings defended their right to rule. Yeah.
So, but it says here, you'll be free to set a king over yourself, one chosen by the Lord your God. So there's still the divine stamp that's necessary.
Right, good point. Right.
Divine standard
approval. Right.
But God is choosing the person.
God is choosing the person, and the person is still not God, for sure, and has to obey God. Okay?
Rabbi, it's strange, the whole thing about you mentioned in the Torah, because the king started not because Hashem wanted us to have a king. The people wanted to have a king.
Well, that's debatable. That's what I started out with. That's debatable, whether this is something that Hashem mandated or that Hashem said, if you want one, you can have. That's the debate. And even if it's the second way, the possibility of it could still have been introduced in Vayikra and Bamidbar. And it's not introduced then. It's only introduced now. And not only that, it's introduced in a very, very limited fashion.
It's almost
because they didn't ask to have a king, so the whole issue was.
But once you're addressing it, address it. So this is apparently the Torah's view of a king. It's a very, very limited, and we're going to see it's even more limited. We'll see. Do you want to say something?
The Torah really wanted us to have.
Like I said, it's unclear. It's a big machloket amongst the commentaries as to what the status of a monarch is in the Torah. Is it something lichatchila, right, that the Torah wanted, or only something that the Torah was willing to tolerate once the Jews asked for it? Yeah. Hold on one second. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say that it seems like, you know, God realized it was kind of an inevitability. You had, you know, tribes. You need some sort of unifier. And that's really what the king would be. Would be, you know,
right.
That
but we know that, that it was a disaster.
It was.
Right. Once it once we had it, it didn't
well,
do.
We were warned.
Right. Right.
So,
yeah.
So there are also other.
Ah, exactly. Good. That's all I want to get into. Why? What? What's going on there? Let's look. Okay. First of all, when this is interesting, you see this starting on page 14. Micha Gooden makes a big deal about this. When is the king? When is the king coronated? At what point? After what has already happened? You have to already enter into Eretz Yisrael. Not only that. You have to take possession of it and settle in it. Only then do you have a king, which seems to be backwards, right? When you want to conquer a land and settle it and live in it, you would appoint a king who is going to manage all of that, right?
We were different. We were different because we weren't going in as a people. Not we.
Yeah.
We went in as a group of tribes. Some of them didn't even settle in Eretz Yisrael.
Right.
So it was more, we were getting rid of all these other little kings that were all over Canaan.
Wouldn't it have been nice to have a king to be in charge of that whole process? It seems that that would be the normal thing to do, right? But if you look on page 68, Goodman says, middle of the paragraph, middle of the page, HaMelech Yimuneh Omer Moshe, Rak B'mikre Sha'am Yivakesh L'manot, Oto. First of all, only once the people asked for him. Ubakasha kazot yichola lavo rak la'acher shebnei Yisrael kvar yihiyu ba'aretz. Only after they've come. Why? What does that protect against? That the king only gets anointed, appointed, after they've settled. What does that protect against?
Well, there's all the concern that they're going to attribute either a loss or victory to human beings.
Right, it protects against the king saying, look what I did for you. I established a nation. I established a land. I vanquished all these people. He can't do that now. He's being born on third base.
So for the same reason that Moshe Rabbeinu was not allowed to...
Could be.
One of the reasons.
Right, could be. Right, but this guy's being right elected, anointed, when the hard work has already been done. So it's a protection against the king saying, like at the bottom of page 413 in verse 20, Livilti rum livavo me'achav. Thus he will not act haughtily towards his fellows. Because he didn't do anything. Yes. A king here. Here we're talking about a king.
But it sounds like the role is not, oh, a king. The role is like that.
Like a figurehead.
Yeah,
right. Well, but we call it a king, and I think that's the point, meaning it's we call it a melech, but it does not have what we would normally attribute in terms of powers and responsibilities towards a king. And it gets, there's more. Let's keep going. This is, was also mentioned. Right? Let's look at, maybe we'll come back to this a little bit later, but let's look now at page 70. And if you want to look at the verses are chapter 17, verses 16 and 17. Now on page 413. So now we know he's already only established after they're in. And then what does it say? Rak lo yarbe lo susim. Why not? Right? He cannot have too many horses. He shall not keep many horses. Ah.
Tanks of the
right.
Empire.
What kind of power? Military power. We're telling the king, you're the king, but we're going to limit your ability to take us into war by limiting your arsenal. Right? That was the those were the tanks of the ancient Near East. Rak lo yabelo susim v'lo yashiva ta'am mitzrayima. L'man harbot sus, v'ashem amar lachem lo tosifun lashuba derech hazeod. And don't go back to Egypt, where apparently they were raising horses, so you could go and build your arsenal, right? Let's look at Goodman on page 70, second paragraph from the bottom. Shuv boletet hamigama lahagbil me'od et koach hashalit. Again, we see expressed the desire to limit, to greatly limit, the power of the ruler. Kivar amarnu shazakenim magbilim oto. We already said, which we skipped, that the zakenim, maybe we'll come back to that, the elders were always around him, sort of looking over him, watching, making sure that he wasn't abusing his power. Aval hinei isurim nosafim shezu matarata. But here there are more things, and this is the purpose. Le'isur al ribuy nashim. Ah, we skipped that. Yeah. Also, why is he not allowed to have many wives? Verse 17. And he shall not have many wives. Why not? Oh, okay, interesting. And those women, they're just a terrible distraction. Yeah. Ah, exactly. But why? Right. Why did kings marry? Not only, but often. It was a treaty, right? The king of France is going to marry the king of France's son is going to marry the king of Spain's daughter, and now presto changeo, they're allies, right? So we limit the right. It's an amazing way to understand what's going on here. Let's keep reading in Goodman. Le'isur al ribu nashim. Hayaba olam ha'atik mashma'ut diplomatit mamashit. Forbidding many marriages in the ancient Near East had a clear, a serious diplomatic outcome. Medinot kartu britot be'emtza'ut nisu'im ben malchiot. Right? Countries established treaties via marriage. Marachot yichasim ben medinot nirkimu v'hudku b'yichasim diplomatiyim shenasim yichasim mishpatchim. Diplomacy back then was a family affair. Right, that's how you did diplomacy. Kolamar hamelech hametzuveh lo leharbot nashim hu melech shemugval mirosh b'cholato lichrot britot diplomatiyot im medinot acherot. A king who's not allowed to have many wives is therefore also limited in the treaties he's allowed to enter into with surrounding nations. Not only was his diplomatic ability limited, gam tzivao shel hamelech mugbal. As we said, his army was also limited. Zo mashmuta isur lo yarbelo susim. That's why the Torah says he can't have many horses. Lo susim ein merkavot susim. Without horses, there are no chariots. You can have chariots, but they're not very good without horses. Uveladehem hatzava hu tzava misuras. Without chariots, you have a disabled army. Lilo ribuy shel nashim v'shel susim hatara mikbat merosh merchav mugval meod lemelech. By limiting his diplomacy and military power, the Torah is spelling out a severely limited monarchy. Medubar b'melech sheyecholet Hatamrun hadiplomatit vatsavit shelo pichuta. Very, very little power in these areas. V'lekach nusaf ha'isur ha'shlishi v'kesef v'zahav lo yarbelo ma'od. And on top of that, we add a third isur, a third prohibition. He's not allowed to pile on the treasury. Hamelech lo yachol lakachat meha'am et mishavav. He can't go taking money from the people in order to build his treasury. Ima'am yivakesh melech. If the people decide they want a king, Kovat HaTorah, the Torah establishes, Tarich Leheater Levakashato. We have to give in. Ach, Rak B'Tanaim Kishuchim. With only these specific and limited conditions. Lo Ribuy Shel Nashim, Susim U'Misim. Without many wives, horses, and taxes. Bahagbala Shel HaBritot HaDiplomatiyot, Shel Otzmat HaTzava, V'Shel Godel HaTaktziv. Right, the treasury is limited, The military is limited, and diplomacy is limited. That's all the king, that, right? If you would ask what's the king's job, it's to make treaties, fight wars, and collect taxes. And our king can't do any of it. Right? You want a king? Great, but it's going to be very limited. Do you want to say something?
Well, none of our kings can fight the king.
Right. Everything. He goes on to say, Goodman, that our kings that we read about in the Book of Kings didn't listen, and it didn't work. And it may have not worked because they didn't listen. Right? But the vision of the king is supposed to be this. Okay.
So for what purpose? I wouldn't want to have a king.
He's supposed to be like a philosopher king. He's supposed to show the someone. No, that's the whole thing, right? That's the whole beauty of it. If you had a king that lived this way, you could say, wow, he has all this power, but he's not exercising it. And he's a scholar. Right? He's supposed to be Right. He's supposed to be an image of self-control and supposed to serve as an example of how people, right? If the king is not going to build his treasury, and the king is not going to collect wives, and the king is not going to collect power, maybe I shouldn't either.
Maybe this is not about a king, but the epitome of what we're supposed to
strive. Right, right. It could be just about, right.
Maybe the Torah really don't want to serve a king.
Right. It could be. Ha-historia shel ha-politika melamedet sha-ha-shi'ifut shel melachim hein tamid otan shi'ifut. Political history has taught us that the desires of a king are all the same. La-hagdil et koach shebiyadehem, to increase their strength, that merchav ha-shlita shel malchutam, and the reach of their ability to rule over the surrounding areas. Achatara minaseh li-yased malchut she'eno ki yeter ha-malchiyot. But the Torah wishes to establish a type of monarchy which is not like the others. Malchut she'esh lo koach mitzumtzam, a monarchy that has a limited power. Ribonot mugbalot, powers which are fenced in. Moshe chozeh she'yavo yom va'am yivakesh melech kemo l'chol ha'amim v'hu meshiv melech kein k'chol ha'amim lo. Moshe foresees a time when the people are going to say, we want a king like everyone else. And Moshe will say, you could have a king, it's not going to be like everyone else's king. Right? The Kohanim, someone has to write him a Torah. Ein ladat b'midyak ma mashmuta shel ketivat sefer melefnei ha-kohanim ha-leviyim. It's unclear, as Shula asked and noticed. What's the importance of the Torah being written before the Kohanim and Leviim? Hatichushahi shel hitrachashut textit. Hamelech omeid mul ha-Kohanim v'kotev. Ulai medubar b'remez le-text kadum, sheyabo element shel ketiva, hadivarim einam nehirim, ach davar echad barur. Im hamelech kotev mul ha-Kohanim and Leviim, perusho shel davar shu einenu echad mehem. Hamelech einenu ishdat, Hamalchut nivdelet mikuna. Right, the fact that the king is writing this Torah and there's a kohen next to him is the Torah's way of saying, king, you're not a kohen. Right, the kohen is the religious leader. Right, separation of powers. Right, you are not the religious leader. Who's the religious leader? The guy standing next to you, the kohen. He's the religious leader. Hamalchut nivdel mikuna. Lo rak shamelach mugal diplomatic v'tzevit, gam et hakoach hadati hu eino yakol l'kayetz kirtzono. He also has no religious power over the people. Hadat nimtzeit michutz l'tava hashaga shel hashalit. Religion stands outside of the framework of the reach, if you will, of the king. So here you have diplomatic limits, military limits, religious limits, and financial limits on the king. Turn to page 72. We finish up with the psukim from our parsha. By Taimo v'karabo kol yimei chayav, he has to have this Torah with him all his life and read it, in order so he will learn to fear God, to carry out the words of his Torah, this Torah, and the statutes, these statutes. Like we said, so he does not act haughtily towards his fellow man. Chaviyat ha'chayim shel ha'melech hi chaviya merusenet. Very, very limited. Tiskoret matmedet shehu mugbal. And there's always, he has to have this Torah with him all the time as a reminder of the limits. Yeah? Well, there's one that he always had with him and one not. Yes. Ma'pasuk hazeh mita'er et ha'tachlit ha'psikologit v'ha'musarit shel ha'tzivat l'chokim l'vulti rom l'vavo me'achav. And the Torah here tells us why he has all these limits. Of monetary, religious, diplomatic, and military. Why? So he should not get haughty. Matarat ha'gbala shel ha'melech hu l'hagbil gam et ha'ego shelo. Now we're trying to limit the ego of the king. Hatorah morida et hamelech lekarka umotira et hatodaa shelo domela zo shel shar b'nei ha'am shemimenu tzamach. It's almost as if the king is just like everybody else. Umadua, why? Inei pasuk ha'meteer et ha'tigmul ha'tzafui lo im yakpid hamelech lishmor al chukei ha'malchut. If the king listens, l'man yarich yamim ha'mamlachto hu uvanav b'kerev Yisrael. That's how he could maintain a long rule, right? If he does this, the psukim hamitarim et hamigbalot al kocha shel hamalchut yesh tam v'tachlit. Shemelech yizkor shu einu sholet el nishlat. The king should remember that he is not a ruler, but he is ruled. Shu einu me'al ha'am el chelak mimenu. He's not above the nation, but one of them. Ukishetotza'a me his karot zu hu yasher be'emet hamelech shel ha'am. Zeu paradox hamalucha. Another English word.
Let me finish.
This is the paradox of the king. Rakim hamelech yagish she'enenu hamelech. Only once the king feels that he's not a king, hu yishayer melech. That's when he'll be able to stay king. Im yachshov shehu haribon, hu yabed et haribonot. If he believes that he's really in charge, he'll lose his leadership. Sefer Devarim Koveya Sherak Misha Muchan Likabel Alatzmo et Hagbalot Hashlita Nishar Bishlita. The only one who can stay in power are the ones who accept the limitations of their power. So it is indeed a paradox. So this is what I called in the announcement a real revolution that Moshe does. Moshe looks around and sees all the other kings of the ancient Near East. Right, maybe remembering Paro from Mitzrayim, right, and what that king was capable of doing with unlimited power. And Moshe says, I'm not going to have any of that, even though I'm not going to be there. Right, this is what I'm setting up for you. You want a king? Fine, that's going to be nothing like the king that your parents and grandparents knew in Mitzrayim. It's a totally limited king. Who's supposed to be this philosopher king, scholar? Yes.
So how come later on we really have kings like King David and King Solomon, a lot of women?
And what happened to him?
The war.
They all led to his downfall. That's exactly that's what if you read on, we don't have time. If you read on in Goodman's book, he says this is the ideal, and people didn't listen to the ideal, and ultimately the kingdom first was split, and then they both are poof gone.
So is it Moshe saying this, or is
well, there's no Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe Leimor here. This is Moshe speaking. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know. It's never happened.
No, but it sounds good. Probably David was the
right?
David was probably
although we're going to hear this Shabbos about David and his trips up to the rooftop. We'll hear that. That's the first. I'm giving a sermon series on Jews who sinned and repented. And we're starting with King David. Yeah, that was a doozy. So, yeah, he may have been close, but...
He was the closest.
The truth is, I don't want to give too much away, but this is a perfect example. Lo yarbe lo nashim, right? You're not supposed to take many wives, right? So David sees Bathsheba. He likes what he sees. And he basically forces her to become his wife. He totally abuses his power, right? There's a Gemara that says David forced himself on Bathsheba. So there are two ways to read that, Gemara. One, that he raped her, physically forced himself on her, which is terrible. But even if you don't want to say that, you will say, well, we have come to understand now. He was the boss and she was a subordinate. And she simply could not say no. That's exactly what the Torah is telling us that the king's not allowed to do. He's not allowed to abuse his power. So, yes, Shula, you're right. The kings we read about do not seem to follow this model. So maybe Moshe is sitting up saying, I told you so. All right, everybody. Yeshikoach. Have a wonderful day.